The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
One of the important Vipassana teachers in our lineage was a man named Munindraji. And one of the important little teachings that he had is that if it's not simple, it's not Vipassana. And that's a nice thing to remember. If it's not simple, it's not Vipassana. And you might, as you engage into the practice today, try to use that as a reference point for how you practice mindfulness. Try to keep it really simple. And so when you sit and meditate, there's something to be said about keeping it really simple and just staying with your breathing. Just be with your breath. That's simple. Just keep your mind there. And all the different ways in which your mind gets more complicated, certainly thinking about other things and other times, trying to fix things or understand things, or ways in which you make the meditation complicated. But you need to attain something and make something happen and avoid things. Just remember, simple. Come back. Just be really simple with the breath. Keeping the breath right in the middle of whatever's going on. Just stay simple with the breath. It's a wonderful antidote to the tendency of the mind to be complicated. Tendency of the mind to, for example, to complicate things by relating things so much to a sense of self, to ideas of self, me, myself, and mine. Just stay with the breathing. And when you do the walking meditation, also keep that really simple. Don't try to do a lot. Just try to be present for your steps as you walk, present for your feet as you walk. And entering into that world, a simple world like that, allows the heart, the mind, the body to settle, to relax, to be present in a way that can be quite productive and useful. Not a lot is needed when you do this practice. See if you can keep it simple. And perhaps that reference point can be useful today. So thank you very much. There is a quote from a Tibetan teacher, Tibetan Buddhist teacher that traveled through the Vipassana world quite a bit some years ago. And the quote is goes something like, "Wisdom teaches me that I'm nothing. Love teaches me that I'm everything. And between the two, my life flows," swings between the two. So the idea that wisdom points to the idea that there's nothing which you can point to as saying, this is really who I am. But that love points to a sense of empathy or connectedness, that it makes sense to almost say, well, you know, I'm everyone, I'm everything. So it might be useful to distinguish, at least for teaching purposes, between the mind and the heart. And it's quite beautiful that if the mind is associated at the essence with awareness, that through this practice of ours, we can cultivate an awareness which is open and free, freed of any form of contraction, resistance, suffering, grasping, that there's something really beautiful about a mind, an awareness which is completely open and spacious. And so whatever occurs in that awareness, it's kind of like the image in Buddhism is like clouds drifting in an endless sky. Just kind of like there's this endless blue sky and there's clouds drifting in it. Or like musical notes that drift through the air. You know, at least from what we can see, the musical notes doesn't affect anything. It just kind of floats through, and the air is not affected, at least from what we can see, right, by the musical note. So the same thing, the mind, the musical notes go through the mind, and it just kind of goes right through. or we see something that is unpleasant, and it has no different effect on the mind than something pleasant. The mind doesn't get upset, doesn't get agitated, doesn't waver, doesn't shut down, doesn't get excited. The awareness just stays open. There's tremendous clarity that can be there. And it can be a great relief for people to discover that capacity of awareness to stay open and just allow things to occur within it. One of the things that interferes with that spaciousness is there being an agent, a self, a me, experiencing things. That's like a little, puts up a little wall or a little bit of something. And so to actually sense directly kind of a selfless quality of awareness, that things arise, awareness is selfless, things arise and occur in a selfless way, in personal ways, just there. It can be a great relief, and it can feel like liberation, because you feel like you see, you know, that this is a place where the mind doesn't grasp, or if the mind does grasp, you see it in highlight. So so in Vipassana, sometimes we talk about mindfulness being is the same as practicing acceptance, accepting of what is. And how I understand that word acceptance in this context is we're accepting it into the field of awareness. Everything's acceptable for awareness. There's nothing we exclude, nothing we contract around, nothing that we push away. Everything has a place in awareness. It doesn't mean that we accept some things that should be changed. You know, if you step on a nail and the nail goes into your toe, you don't just simply sit and practice acceptance. You walk down the street, having the nail go further and further in. If you have a nail in your toe, it's possible to have the mind be unruffled by that, spacious, relaxed. But still, you go down and pull the nail out. So the awareness is accepting of it, but your actions might not be. So if we focus a lot on awareness, some people find the teachings of selflessness or not self become quite evident. But if you focus on the heart also can contract, resist, shut down, do all those same things that the mind does. But at least the way we think of the heart can do something else too. The heart does respond. It can respond in other ways besides contracting, getting agitated. The heart can be motivated. The heart can that's a center of empathy, where we kind of feel and sense the emotional life of someone else. And so we can feel and sense that someone else is suffering, someone else is happy, and we can feel a certain kind of connection, it's a very profound connection with someone else, so much so that their well-being doesn't feel so different from your own well-being. And so you in wanting to help them suffer less, it's not exactly like you're helping them, maybe it's almost like you're helping yourself, because of a sense of that connection. And so there are people who feel, you know, great open-heartedness and love, sometimes talk about feeling, you know, that there is no separation between self and other. But that sense of lack of separation is very different than the lack of separation someone would point to when they're focusing on the mind. The mind, everything's in the mind, everything happens in the mind, no separation. But it's all kind of clear. In the heart, there's no separation, but there's this warmth. There's compassion, there's love, there's this kind of emotional connection that resides there. And so when people do practice, Buddhist practice, for example, or different situations, some people will lean towards the heart. Some people will lean more towards the mind. And certain practices lean more towards the mind, and certain practices lean more towards the heart, in the way I'm talking about it today. So, for example, when I was in Burma, my teacher in Burma made it very clear admonition admonishment almost to us when we were practicing, was he said, when you practice vipassana, give no focus, no attention to compassion. And that was kind of, you know, that seemed kind of austere to me. But what I understood from it was that any involvement, engagement in the world of compassion was a little distraction from doing the moment-to-moment practice of seeing clearly what's there, what's here. And I felt it was actually useful to put that aside as any kind of, in terms of giving any attention, any practice, developing compassion in that context, because something else is being developed. And that's fine in that particular laboratory. But then to extrapolate from that and say, oh, you should never be involved in compassion, you should only, you know, be mindful, you know, in some kind of way, I think then it becomes kind of lopsided. And but then to but then you can get lopsided in the other direction, lean too far in the world of compassion. And one of the things that happens sometimes with too much in the compassion is that too much in the heartfelt kind of connection to people and all that, is that sometimes there's not enough attention given to the mind. And so the mind then can contract or get tight, or sometimes there can be too much self, even though now everything is self, but then that self becomes really big. And conceit can come in, a variety of things. And so it can get imbalanced in the direction of the heart, of compassion as well. And people forget. Ideally, both those spheres are held together. The compassion, the heart, mindfulness, clarity, and the mind. And you know, I don't actually believe that they're separate. But the mind sometimes makes a separation, and then people lean one direction or the other. And I think it's okay to lean one direction or the other sometimes, to emphasize one or the other at times, but it can be too much at times. And one of the things that I look for in practice is the ability to flow back and forth freely and not to get stuck in one place. And so, you know, rather than having, that's the point of practice, is to dwell in clarity. That's the point of practice, is to dwell in the heart and be all loving. I think that to have the fluidity in different circumstances to flow and according to what's needed. According to what's needed with you personally. Sometimes you need to focus more on the mind, what goes on there. Sometimes it's good to cultivate the heart. And also what's needed around us, in the world around us. What's needed? What does the world need from us? Does it need our clarity, or does it need our love? In different situations, different things are needed. And if the situation requires one or the other, then you might sometimes, at least I find, at least maybe my understanding is still inadequate, or my practice is still inadequate, but I found that I've had to choose a little bit between them at times. That when what I want is to respond to the suffering of the world, I don't do all I could. I know I can do to keep my mind clear and calm. When I'm involved in the world and being a teacher, for example, it's not so easy for me to. I can't just sit down and meditate and enter into some deep, deep state of samadhi. Even though people probably imagine I am maybe sometimes, but you know, boom, that Gil, you know, sits there so still, you know, he must be in the ninth samadhi. Or whatever, maybe you don't think that, but ninth, well, I'm on the way to going on my way to the 14th. but if I spend a lot more time on my own meditation practice, you know, I could get into deep states pretty easily. But I choose not to do that because I have something else I'm doing with my life right now. And I'm responding to the world in a way, that's what seems the right thing for me to do. And slowly the two also develop together, hand in hand. So in different times, different days, different months, different years, we emphasize different parts of our life. And I think that learning to go back and forth and develop them, you know, then over a longer period of time, over a lifetime or something, over years, we develop into being a fuller person. And what I think what practice in Buddhism and the world needs is for us to become full people, not to become lopsided one side or the other. And I certainly, I think it's dangerous even to only emphasize one side of the equation, to only emphasize. And as one person said in an interview today, she came and talked about someone who went to a conference or meeting or class or something for teaching people to how to teach mindfulness in juvenile hall. Beautiful thing to do. And some guy came from a kind of a non-dual spiritual tradition and announced that it didn't really matter if you taught meditation to juveniles in juvenile hall or to the guards. Nothing matters. And that kind of left everyone perplexed, apparently. So it doesn't matter. In the clarity of the mind, it doesn't matter. The mind doesn't have to be ruffled or changed by any of that. But it does matter in the heart. So, and how do you hold both together? How do you hold the heart in the mind? And how do you hold the mind in the heart? I think it's one of the great tasks of this Buddhist life, Buddhist practice. Okay, I hope that made some sense to you. May you cultivate both.